What's up, everybody? It's Sam with Rowdy Alternative, and today we're with the Retrograde, a rock band out of Tallahassee, right?
Oh, yeah.
Hell yeah. How you guys doing?
Cold. Yeah, it's cold, man. We're about to get snow. Wait, are we frozen on your screen?
Yeah, why? It's laggy sometimes.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, it's about snow in Tallahassee for the first time in 1,000 years.
So, damn.
We're preparing.
Yeah, it's pretty frozen here, too. It sucks, but warm months coming ahead, so we're ready for that. So I guess let's just get started, boys. So I guess what have you guys been up to recently? I know, obviously, the year just kicked off and probably getting back into the swing of things. So what are you guys up to right now when it comes to shows or studio time, anything like that?
Yeah, so we've been writing. Obviously, we're getting ready to go on this tour with Feel, which we're super excited about. But it's looking like in the next maybe month and a half or so, we're going to be up in the studio in Nashville cutting an EP. So we're excited for that.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously, yeah, this tour. Going to be a good time. You know, a bunch of cool cities we've never been to and a couple we have. So we're all going to be stuck in a van together and getting nice and cozy.
Yeah, that'll be fun. I just had Feel on a couple weeks ago. Those are some good guys. Do you guys work a lot with them, or what's the dynamic there?
Yeah, this is our first time playing with them. We actually have our first show coming up Thursday, so we've talked over the phone. They seem like really cool guys, man. We're excited to meet them in person and get to play with them. I think it's going to be a really good bill.
Yeah, right on. So I guess let's start from the beginning, y'all, just so people get to know you. If you guys want to just explain how you guys, like, maybe met each other, got together as a group, go ahead.
You tell this one good, man. Tell
about it. Okay, so this iteration of the Retrograde that you see in front of you, we've been playing together since April of this year. But Joey and I, we actually met in high school. I think you were, like, 17 or 18, and I was maybe 18 years old, too. And we were just playing on the local scene, doing a bunch of cover gigs and blues gigs. And I got a call to join his funk band. He was in a funk band.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We were doing, like, old Motown stuff.
Super low volume.
It was loud. Funk. It was so fun. We had a horn section and everything. So we were playing the local scene. And then COVID hit. And everybody at the time went to college. So it was mainly Joey and I just figuring out how to play our instruments, how to write music, how to play together. And along the way, Josiah, he was playing regionally with a couple blues artists and just we were writing, and Joey and I, and we've known Josiah and we gave him a call, and we've been playing together since 2022. And after this first record is kind of when Cade came in picture. We went to Fame Studios and cut our first 10-song album up there, and it was a real guitar heavy record. Did it 5 days, but after the fact, like, okay, we need somebody to play these parts live, and that explains how everybody kind of got here. And we're all from different places in the United States, but yeah, all playing music right now here together, and we're loving it.
Right on. So what was the, when you guys first, like, started, like, getting going as a group with any iteration, I guess? I guess it's because when you guys first got started, like, it wasn't all of you guys right away, I guess. So when you were, like, first getting the hang of it and getting involved in the scene, what was it like? Because I know, and there's a lot of badass bands that come out of Florida, but, like, I'm very unfamiliar with the local scene, I guess, because, like, you know, Texas has its scene that's pretty storied. Nashville, you know, the big cities, stuff like that, that are, you know, music is big there. So can you explain, like what the scene was like where you guys come from when you were first getting going?
Yeah, I mean, Tallahassee, like, there's been a few bands that came out of here. Creed was from here. Right after that was a band called Mayday Parade. And then before that, it was real, you know, a lot of blues players, you know, big blues history in Tallahassee. And I guess, you know, we're trying to be the next little piece of music history to come from here. But locally, it was a lot of blues clubs and bar gigs, and it, you know, it has its ebbs and flows. When we were coming up, it was actually kind of...
It was a good time.
It was, yeah, it was good, but it was kind of on the way down, yeah. You know, because COVID had just happened, a lot of joints shut down. So early on, it was hard to find gigs consistently, which in turn just let us, you know, play in our little home studio and you know, put in a lot of work that you know, paid off once things started to open back up.
Yeah, so, I mean, mainly to answer your question, there's a lot of bar gigs, and we just played the bar gauntlet in the Southeast. I know Josiah and I, we'd, like, be playing 4 or 5 nights a week at busy seasons, just playing around the state, and, you know, for hire guys, too. So, I mean, we just played as much as we could, and, yeah, one thing led to another.
Right on. So, since you mentioned, like, you guys were coming up around COVID and everything, as a up-and-coming band at that time, how did you guys navigate that? Because obviously, you know, everyone knows, like, the show's stopped, all that stuff, but I also hear that a lot of people, kind of how you mentioned, were able to really lock in creatively, like, recording, or a lot of people, like, started doing the... like those live streams, stuff like that on the social medias and everything. So how did you guys kind of get through that whole period and like really like keep going as an up and coming band?
Yeah. I mean, like we didn't play too much,
nah.
which was hard, but, what we did do was we knew that, you know, making content was getting big. So we started just filming TikToks in the little home studio we had, which then led to, you know, us getting some attention and, you know, led us to our first label and, you know, kind of got us to where we are now. So a lot of our time was spent just learning to play with each other and doing, you know, the best with what we had, because there really wasn't much going on there. You know, places were closing down. So, you know, the gig that used to be there just became a coffee shop. And now it's gone forever. So, you know, a lot of social media, a lot of writing. And, yeah, I think that's pretty much it. That's how we kind of got by.
Yeah, we just essentially made a bunch of content and practiced all day. Mm-hmm. It kind of led to where we are now.
Yeah, right on. When I first heard you guys, I feel like your guys' sound, at least from... when I first listened to you, it has that old school sound. I'm sure you guys hear this all the time. You have like the old school retro kind of like old rock and roll kind of style. And you get that a lot with, bands like, I guess, Dirty Honey, like Van Feel we were talking about. Like it's kind of cool. Cause with modern rock, it there is like a whole bunch of different like umbrellas, subgenres and stuff. But it is a really weird niche, I think, with the kind of sound you guys have. And it's really cool to hear a fresh and, like, new version of maybe an old sound people would compare it to. So I guess how would you guys describe your own sound? Because it probably gets old here. And, oh, you guys sound like fucking, like, Aerosmith or something like that. Like, I'm sure that gets old. So how would you guys describe that sound?
Yeah, I mean, the first record was super guitar-heavy, very southern rock. Mm-hmm. But you couldn't quite put your finger on a single act, which I think was a result of us being young. And
we're still young.
Still young, yeah. I mean, but I guess being, you know, a little wet behind the ears and just going into a studio and saying, all right, well, we got 5 days to cut a record. Let's just go record. You know, there wasn't too much thought behind it. We just kind of got thrown into it. So I think what you heard was a lot of our individual inspirations, which I think together made a really cool sound. And I think like this next EP we're going to cut is definitely going to expand on stuff we've already done, as well as kind of dip our toes into another sound that is really just the new writing that we've been doing. And the last thing we want to get stuck into is playing the same album 8 times and then calling it a career.
Yeah, for sure. Do you guys get a lot of that, like those comparisons a lot? Like, you guys sound so much like this band from 40 years ago or some shit like that. And does that be honest, like that, does that get old? Or, you know, cause like you want to be your own band without being compared.
I think it's a really cool, I know people are trying to be kind and there's no reason for us not to, I don't get offended by it at all. Like, oh, you guys sound like the Black Crowes. Like, that's awesome.
That's a
like,
honor, dude.
Like, that's dope, you know? Yeah, like, sure. That's, you know, we're not necessarily going for that. Like, we're trying to be creative and make something that's, you know, that speaks to the music we want to make. Mm-hmm. But saying, yeah, that sounds like the Black Crowes or Aerosmith or Dirty Honey. Like, that's awesome. Those are great bands, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'd love to sound like them, you know? That's cool that you think we do.
Yeah. Right. I guess just being a part of this generation of rock and roll music, what is your guys' like, I asked the band Feel This too, about what they thought about of this state of rock that we're in now. Because you have the classic, like, rock is dead crap that's been going around for a while now. And I feel like it's not. I'm sure you guys don't either. But how would you guys describe, like, the landscape of today's rock music and maybe the direction it'll be going in the next few years?
I think, you know, if you look at some of the biggest artists right now, I think you're starting to see their records are involving human instruments again.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a very telling sign that people are starting to look for just humans getting on a stage and playing music.
Yeah.
So I think that's good. I think there's a lot of bands, you know, the way I look at it is like you kind of have like the people who are pulling more from the classic stuff, and then you also have kind of the more indie scene. And, you know, the indie scene's getting really big. I mean, there's some really cool bands that are doing it right now and selling out theaters. And I think that's a good pulse for where rock music is going. And I think the key is just going to be finding like a really good in-between of like that indie sound and that classic sound, because I don't really think anyone's done that.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of where it's headed.
Yeah.
At least in my opinion. But what do I know?
Well, I mean, what do I know? But what I felt, the indie shows that are happening right now are super powerful. And a lot of rock heads totally dismiss it. They're like, oh, and it's not real rock and roll. Like, I don't like it. But at the end of the day, they're selling out 20,000 seats. And it's awesome. Like, I don't know. The musical direction of tomorrow is yet to be seen, but it's exciting to think about where it's going.
I think the good thing about this next record we're going to cut is that it's definitely going to blend kind of the people who can't get into indie because they're real big into rock and the people who can't get into rock because they're real big into indie.
Right.
I think that's going to be cool about this next record.
Yeah. That'll help me out then, because I don't avoid indie, but it's just like, I don't know where to start kind of thing. Cause like, I feel like that's a broad, I guess, genre, you know, indie music.
Yeah.
It's like, what is indie music? And, it's really fascinating. Cause like you said, like they're selling out like theaters and shit. And like a lot of the time, like I haven't even heard of these guys. Like a lot of people haven't heard of them, but they have those fan bases that are, I don't know if you would call it cult fan bases, but they have like those giant fan bases and they've been around for a long time too. So you're right. It is very interesting. And, you also mentioned, like, and we're going to talk about your new music here in a minute, but with the you guys being able to sound fresh and you're just playing, like, you're humans playing instruments, like you said. You're not using samples, any of that stuff. And it's like that to a lot of people who maybe didn't grow up listening to the classic stuff, like you said, like the Black Crowes, guys like that. Like, to them, it's like, what's this new sound? It's like, I mean, it's just guys playing music, there's no trap beats behind it. There's nothing like that. It's like, this is the most pure form you're gonna have.
Well, I was gonna say, like, it's the purest form. It's been happening for 100 years.
Yeah, yeah,
more.
And
I'm not a historian, but it seems like more.
Yeah, for real. And like being able to progress, and like you said, not make the same album over and over again throughout your career. That I think that when it comes to what shows what artists or bands are that good and worth the hype and talented is if they're able to progress and, you know, makes like pull it off. You know what I mean? Like it's cool to experiment regardless, but. And you have the guys like AC/DC, they play the same stuff, but they're AC/DC, you know, like their formula works. But like being able to progress as a new band, like a, that, you know, like that, I think that's really says something about them.
Yeah. And like I started bringing a couple ideas to the guys and we're like, you know, this sounds way different. And I thought back to like my favorite records and it's like, there's no reason Helter Skelter and Martha My Dear should be on the same album.
Yeah.
Love that they are
right.
Oh, you know? And I think that's where it is. Like, if the Beatles just made "Please Please Me" 9 times, we wouldn't know who they are. They would have been like, oh, you know,
just
it'd be the same
British Invasion band.
Yeah, just another British Invasion group. You know, we are the Monkees. You know, it's like.
But the stuff that we remember the Beatles for at the time was the most radical. Mm. Like it was, I was out
way out
artistic, and I think that's something to hold on to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's how we're kind of attacking it. It's like, you know, we're just going to make music that interests us because at the end of the day, like when you go in to cut a record, you're looking to make an album that you want to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people get caught up in making the album that they think will be successful. And it's really just like, I want to make a record because I want to listen to it and no one's made it yet. Yeah. I think there's some hidden sauce in there.
For sure. And like when you make like you come out with an album or an EP, I like to look at it as like this is where this band is at now. And
exactly.
Like
or today.
Yeah. And like that the Beatles you mentioned are the perfect example of it. Like Please Please Me is, you know, they're fresh mop top guys from Liverpool. And then, you know, they got a little weird and they made, you know, Sergeant Pepper. It's like,
you know,
yeah. It's awesome. And
not the
but
drugs.
Hell yeah.
It don't make you cool.
And it's funny. I've been looking up a lot of, looking into Brian Jones from the Rolling Stones a lot. And like that just led me down a rabbit hole to, I'm kicking myself. I can't remember what album it is, but I think it's because it's real psychedelic. It came out right after Sgt. Pepper did.
Oh, that would have been
Satan, Satanic.
Majesty's Request.
Yeah, and like the Stones like tried to like cover it up like because they weren't like really proud of it. They thought it was like kind of bullshit, I guess. I don't know. I don't know their actual thoughts on it. That's what I heard, but it's just kind of funny like that's where you were at that time. And like, you know, if it flops, it flops, I guess, but that's still like a statement of this is the music we're making this year. And I don't know. It's kind of interesting to me.
Well, I think when you look back on artists' discography, that's like the coolest part is to see like the eras they went through. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the Stones is a great example. Like Satanic Majesty's Request, you're like, oh, this doesn't sound like the Rolling Stones.
Yeah.
But, you know, She's a Rainbow is still a great song.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
For
and
sure.
And Exile, too. Like, that was such a moment.
Yeah.
And
you can just hear the cocaine.
And you can do like we listened to that on vinyl for the first time not too long ago, just because we all moved into this place and like we just had a bunch of records in our system to listen on. So listening to that thing on wax, it felt like you were there. Few of the hours.
Yeah, like that's another thing. I could talk vinyl for like an hour. Like that's I'm glad that's back. By the way, vinyl. Like if there's any.
We got vinyl of our record and like it sells like crazy at live shows because people, you know, I think people got sick of just like going on iTunes and buying an album or streaming on Spotify. It's cool to hold your music.
Yeah. And a lot, I know a lot of people who buy vinyl, they don't even have anything to play it on. They're just like, it's like artwork, you know, they hang it up on something or they put it in the corner of the room. It's really cool. And it's a great strategy to get into like as a band, I'd assume to like for marketing and selling like merch, like you said, it flies off the shelves.
Yeah. People are really back into vinyl. I mean, it's like with our record, it was cool to just be able to hold our debut album. You know, that was really cool. And like when you open it up, it's got like all these pictures of us. Yeah, go grab one. It's got like all these pictures of us at Fame Studios recording in Studio B. And Carson, I think we got a bunch of boxes over here.
Got a poster.
All right.
Check this out.
There's a poster in it too.
Grabbing the goods. It comes with a poster.
Oh, so you guys did the whole deal. You didn't just do the.
Man, we, you know what? If we're going to do it.
Yeah, we got to do it.
You know?
Hell yeah.
Fresh box, he said.
Fresh box of vinyl. Look at this. Here he comes.
So this is our debut
album. Yeah, I thought. Look,
damn,
it's.
That was a good one.
We got a little bit of heat for the comments. No, but yeah, it's like a folds out and it's cool, man. It's very cool to hold your records.
Cute That's picture. Sick. It's like a scrapbook my mom made when I was a kid or not, you know.
Damn. Yeah, we got to clip that. That was great.
Yeah. You know, we're good for at least one or two, you know, good jokes, you know.
Hell yeah, the poster. Damn.
Yeah, nice. But I'm glad vinyl's back.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, once the 8-track comes back, we're going to capitalize on that.
8-track CDs. I have, like, so many CDs that they're just, like, collecting dust, but, you know, I can't get rid of them.
CD players anymore.
None of my cars have had a CD player.
I know. It's terrible. But let's talk a bit, before we get into your new stuff coming out. First off, when it comes to writing, obviously you guys, you all have a hand in the creative process, but when it comes to... I guess the lyrical aspect, is there like one of you, two of you, all of you? How do you guys usually songwrite?
Yeah, so I, especially for this next record, I did a lot of writing up at Fame Studios. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these guys all joined me at different parts. Sometimes it was just me, one of them, and our buddy Spencer, who's the studio manager up there. We got to write with this really cool girl. Her name was Casey Smith. Okay. She's like a brilliant writer. She wrote with like Chapel Roan and Rodrigo. But when it comes to like lyrics, it's mainly whoever's in the room. We're just throwing out lines and trying to find a little special sauce.
Right. Hell yeah. That's awesome. When you guys, so your last release, that came about June of last year, right?
Yeah.
So that was, first off, I loved it. I listened to it today a few times at work, and like it's great and very replayable, which is, you know, like I think that's a clutch thing to have with a release. It's not just like one and done kind of thing. It's very replayable. So was there like a certain statement you guys wanted to make with it? Were there like themes involved, a certain message you wanted out, anything like that with this release?
I feel like when we went in to record it, there wasn't like an agenda in mind. We were just like, let's just get this thing on tape and put it out and see what happens. And I think like when you listen to it, you can hear like the angst behind it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very, you know, tumultuous time, if that's a word.
Yeah,
that is. It's an SAT word.
That's an SAT word, which I didn't take. I didn't take the SAT.
Neither did I.
Yeah. I was like 7 a.m. Yeah, right. I'm like... but yeah, like I think the songs were written when we were all teenagers. So I think you can kind of hear like that little bit of teenage anger and pent up frustration. And I think we just wanted to go in and just cut like a really solid live record. And I think we definitely captured some pretty cool moments there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you think, man?
Yeah, I mean, Kay did a great job on.
Yeah, Kay did a great job on that first record.
No, it was.
Yeah, he was there.
It was really cool though. We spent, like they were saying before, like in 2022, 2021, we spent most of our time in the home studio, kind of workshopping stuff, writing all the stuff you're supposed to do. They tell you to do as a band to get better, and we spent a good 2 or 3 weeks like running and, you know, trying to make sure that we had everything as good as we could going into the studio. But then we kind of, we like talked to Spencer a couple of times but we just kind of showed up and did it. We just kind of ran it and
it was fun, man.
It was a ton of fun. And
sick as dogs.
Yeah. I was in the hospital. day before we went, I had like just the worst stomach virus of my life. So I was in there getting pumped up with IVs, and I woke up the next morning just eating crackers. So I'm like, let's go, man. Let's go cut an album.
Yeah, right on.
It's like a, like you said, it's like a snapshot of where we were. Like no real studio experience. No, you know, like working with a producer to be like, yeah, this part of your song's not as good as you think it is, so we need to work on that. Or like, you need an ending for this. Like stuff that we just hadn't encountered, and you kind of see on the record songs that came together 15 minutes before that take, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And getting to play them live for, you know, like you said, what, 6 or 7 months now as a full group? Like some of these songs have really come to life live. And you like look back, you're like, oh, I wish we could record these now that we like know these songs really well. But yeah, it's really special. But no real agenda, like you're saying, just like get in there and make the best record we possibly could.
I had an agenda. Maybe this is like a thing. I just wanted to make a record that I knew as a player, if I looked back on when I was like old and wrinkly, I'd be like, okay, I'm glad I didn't overplay, but you could tell how excited I was. Yeah. Like, I just wanted to respect the songs as much as I could. And I guess as musicians, that's what, if you're really about it, you try and do. So I was just trying to be conscious of that and maybe my drum recording. So just got to put that
in. I think like another big thing when we went to go cut that album, it was we were very open to ideas. You know, we were smart enough to know when to shut up and be like, this guy's been cutting records for 10 years. I've never cut a record. If he thinks this is a good idea, like, yeah, fuck it. Let's try it. Oh, can we curse,
yeah,
by the way?
Yeah, I was going to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, fuck it. Let's try it. Let's just do the thing. And I think that was like why a lot of the songs end up the way they did, is because we were like, yeah, we don't know any better. So sure, we'll try it this way. And I think in the end, that really made the record, I think it helped like the record be more listenable, because a lot of fat was cut off the songs. And looking back, I'm like, yeah, I'm glad we did, because like there's no need to, you know, have another 4 go arounds at the end. It's like you got the idea already, you know.
Yeah.
So, and I think now that we know how to cut a record, I think going in for this next one, we're gonna have a lot of tools in the tool bag that we can use.
Yeah.
Hey.
Like Cade, yeah, we have Cade.
Hell yeah.
Which, you know, we don't let him talk too much.
Yeah, here, I'm going to give him the mic.
If you want to hear what his voice sounds like.
Hey.
All right, that's enough. He's hit his word limit for the day, so.
There you go.
But I think one more thing, like, before we move on is, you know, we cut 7 songs in one day.
Yeah, it was nuts.
Yeah, it was nuts, man. We went in there and we started recording at 10, and I believe the earliest we ever left was 11, and the latest we left was 5 a.m., so there were some long nights, you know. We knew we had 5 days and there was a lot that needed to be recorded. So we're very thankful we had the time to work on it before we got there, so that we weren't just pissing away money.
Right. So, and you kind of hit on it with like working with like other people like outside the group to like cut the album. Was that hard at first for any of you guys to like put like some control over to other people? Like, I'd imagine like for most artists, when they like get that opportunity to work with like other producers or anyone, maybe it's like your upcoming stuff too. Like, was that hard to kind of get the controls over at all? Or
I think that, I know for me personally, I mean, there's so much emotion tied up in these songs and the way that they've kind of come together over time. So hearing someone, not that anyone ever said that, oh, this is bad, but
it's okay if they did, though.
Yeah, for sure. But it's always, it's interesting to hear someone else's take, because you like, and it just makes you rethink decisions you made in the past, which is, it's just cool to have someone else's perspective. So, I mean, I think we're pretty good and open about it, because it's, you know, we're trying to make the best thing we can. But it definitely, I mean, the first day, when we cut the 7 songs, I mean, we did drums, bass, guitar, and we just flew through everything. And we just played most of the songs like we had practiced them and played them live for, you know, years for some of the songs. And then I remember it was Closer to Somewhere was the one song that Spencer, we played it through, and Spencer was like, okay, this is great. Y'all sound phenomenal. This is really great, but you got to do something different. Like, this has got to be different. We're going to figure it out right now. And that was like the first moment of like, oh, okay, here we go. Here's producer moment stepping in. Like, let's make the song a song, you know? And like, we had so much fun in that moment of like, oh crap, what are we going to do? How are we going to do this? Like that, the end of the song, like the super Beatles-y ending, like we just came up with it sitting there. While he was like, you got to figure out an ending because the song doesn't have an ending. We're not going to fade out this song. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not an option.
That was a big, like, what would the Beatles do moment.
Yeah.
You know?
And so you just have to, well, okay, nut up and figure out what you're going to do. So it's fun. That's like part of the creative process, is letting your thing go and become what it's supposed to be. So
I think like the other thing is like, we had so much to record that we didn't have any reservations of like, oh no, this is our song, we're going to record it this way. So I think that was the other kind of thing. It's like, we just plugged in, or like, all right, just roll it, we'll see what happens. You know, we've been good boys, we've been practicing. So,
and also the music isn't ours, it's for Pete.
Yeah, that's some real head shit, man. It's like some real peace and love, you know. I'm not making a record from that little Dan. That's something Bob Dylan said. Like, I'm not making a record for me, man. People.
Oh yeah.
These cats don't get. But then on the flip side, that the very next song we did, after we spent like what, 2 hours on Closer, 3 hours on Closer, we cut like 6 was 4 hours, the like second full tape.
Yeah.
It might have been the first. And so it's just moments that, you know, really exciting to remember. And I don't think we've actually sat down and talked about recording in a while. So
yeah.
It's fun to kind of relive that moment.
Yeah. So I guess there is a very, like, I guess, like, obviously you guys record live, like you said, and there is a very live element when you're listening to your recorded stuff, if that makes any sense. It's a good thing. Like, it's like you know what these guys sound like, and it's like, this is what you get kind of thing. And I also think, like, when it comes to like playing live shows from a fan standpoint, I say it all the time on here, but that's what keeps the fans coming back, I think, and what really makes your new fans is the live shows. Because, you know, some people might not even hear of you guys until they stumble into a show one day, and then they're like fans for life kind of thing. And, live shows being so important, how would you guys describe your live show?
Oh, it's electric, man. It's pretty, I mean, we're drenched in sweat by the end of it. You know, because I guess the kind of way that we think about it is, you know, when we're on stage, we're kind of in our office. And, you know, I would, if I was going to go to a show of a band I'd never heard, like, I'd want them to give it all. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like every night we're just giving it all we got. And
different.
Yeah, it's different every night. You know, it's like the man who taught me guitar said he went to go see the Eagles once, and that was the last time he saw the Eagles, because he was like, they just straight up played the record. And it's like, you know, it's cool, but it's like, you know, you want to see a little, you know, once you become a fan, if you know the record, you want to be like, oh, that's different. You know, that's why you go to the live show, because there's different stuff that's happening. And every night, it's like we're cutting the record again in a different way.
Also, these songs were born in a live context. Like, they came into their own in front of an audience, and, you know, we worked on parts and, you know, during the gig. So, like, these songs are meant to be heard live, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
I think there's, like, the album is powerful and sounds good. But when we play the songs live, I'm like, yeah, that's how you're supposed to hear it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, especially for my being, like, the years that I've spent playing live music, I have been in bands and you show up and you play the same thing like you're supposed to, and there's like a specific bass part you're supposed to play. And those are the songs you get tired of the quickest, you know? It's like, well, I don't want to play that song anymore because I'm bored of it, you know? And I think our goal is to never get bored of these songs. I'm not bored of them yet. So We must be doing something right.
Tomorrow might be different.
I know.
Yeah.
This weekend,
guys,
that might be it.
I got something to say.
Take.
I'm bored.
<He's> bored.
I've had enough. I'm going solo, man.
Hell yeah.
Playing the sitar.
Yeah, getting your sitar phase. But so let's talk a bit about what's to come, guys. You guys have been hitting at some new music and everything. So I guess, what can you tell us about what we got to look forward to? What you guys got coming?
Well, you know, we play the cards close to the vest.
There might be psychedelic polka in our future.
I'm not down for it.
We're not. No, I mean, we've, you know, been working on these new songs, and we've been sitting on them. We've been cutting demos of the house, and I think we're all just getting really excited about, you know, what this next record's going to sound like, because it is different from the debut album, which we all kind of want. You know, we don't want to put out the same old shit. So, you know, the songs are very, you know, very little fat on them, very hooky, real catchy. Because I kind of went in like wanting to write pop songs and play them as rock songs. Mm-hmm. My favorite rock songs are pop songs. And I think that's kind of a little thing that's been missing from like this kind of rock revival we're getting into, is just writing pop songs, you know, like all that great Aerosmith stuff. And, you know, even to an extent, like some of those Zeppelin songs, like those are pop songs.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what this next EP is going to be, EP or record. We don't really know yet. It's all the paperwork and whatnot. We just show up whenever they tell us. Yeah, we'll be there.
Hell yeah. I'm excited for it, guys. It's when I'm on like Spotify and I get like, you have like that release radar shit. So you have like random, like, you know, those randomized playlists and stuff. And you guys popped up on that. That's how I heard of you guys. And like it made me want to keep coming back. And I think that says something about your guys' group, and like any group that could do that. Because, you know, the thought process of anyone listening to music, I think anyone could relate to this, is sometimes you get like 10 seconds into a song, you're like, ain't about it, and you skip it. And then you might not ever hear anything from that band again. It's kind of a scary thought, but I think that's the reality of it. And being a person who loves like listening to albums and stuff, like all the way through, it's very, just listening to like singles and stuff is rough, but that's like the way of the music industry today. Like, it's very single driven, social media driven, whether you like it or not, I guess. So I love asking this question. How do you guys, first off, do you guys even like the whole social media stuff? Like, a lot of people love it because it's a great tool, which I think that's undeniable. It is a great tool to get your stuff out there, but a lot of people like it. A lot of people hate it. Some are good at it. Some are bad at it. So what would your guys' like honest like thoughts be on your, for you guys like navigating that whole thing?
So I will say it's so awesome that it is there. I think, you know, I'm going to get on my soapbox a little bit here.
I got next.
I think, Henry, you mind fixing the camera real quick? I want the people to see.
Way, our tour manager is running the camera, so we apologize.
No, he's doing all good.
It's glitching, and he's just unplugging, replugging. So
yeah.
Shout out.
So like, if we didn't have social media, you would have never heard of us.
Yeah.
You know, that's just because what happened was we had a video that we took at Fame Studios that ended up doing like 30 million views total. And that's how most people found out about us. Which is a blessing. You know, we're very fortunate that that happened. And we heard from a lot of industry people who are like, you need to get your numbers up. This is before this happened. And, you know, our numbers got up, and now, you know, people want to talk. And it's like, well, the fucking music didn't change like a bit, like nothing changed.
Yeah.
We're still the same guys. It's the same songs. And I think, I don't work for a record label. I don't pretend to work for a record label. I would never make it seem like I do. But I think they're starting to realize that there's a big difference between having a bunch of followers and putting asses in chairs. Because, mm-hmm. you know, when we first popped off, it's like we played up in Nashville. And it's like, yeah, it was a Tuesday or Monday night. But it was like we only had a handful of people that were like following us on Instagram. So it's... it's a very interesting, I guess, landscape right now. Very double-edged sword kind of thing.
Yeah, it very much is. I can comment on it.
Comment, man.
Yeah, like Joe said, there is a very strong disconnect with just getting bodies in seats. And, like, it's just a number. It's just serving the artist's ego and then the label's ego that they sign these artists. Like, yeah, you signed a band with 500,000 followers, but do they make good music? I don't know. You tell me. And it's just signing them for superficial reasons and giving them these platforms. But at the end of the day, it's just kind of convoluted and perverse in nature. So it is a double-edged sword because you wouldn't have heard of us, but there's people that
deserve to be heard.
Exactly. Being heard, too. And I guess it's always been like that, just with the nature of the record industry. And it's a game that everybody's got to play nowadays. Just, I hate social media. I think it's...
I think Kate's got something, man.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Kate, I think it ruins the mystique, too.
Yeah.
You know? Because, like, you have, like, the Beatles, or, like, my parents' generation, Michael Jackson, where they would go to their shows and literally freak out so hard that they would pass out. And it's because you didn't see them 24/7. So I think that social media, it's cool. It's like they said, it's a double-edged sword. You get to see what they're doing, but at the same time, when you finally get to see them live,
you've already seen them.
You've already seen them, so it's not as special.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know.
My dad was saying, like, excuse me, we're all just getting over the flu. It's been a rough week over here at the Retrograde House.
I still can't breathe.
Yeah, it's been real bad. My dad said when he was growing up, like, people were like, oh, I wonder what Led Zeppelin's doing right now. And now it's, you know, Led Zeppelin would have been shaking ass on Instagram a lot.
Max, like, Robert, like, doing TikToks and it's promoting his music. Like, no.
Lip syncing some, like, rap song and shit.
Yeah, it would have been like, yeah, it's like, you know,
follow.
You're thinking like, oh, I bet they're on the plane right now having sex and snorting cocaine. It's like, yeah, they probably were. But you didn't know. You weren't supposed to know. They didn't want you to know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely, like, kills the mystique. But, you know, it's great.
I love it. I mean, I never thought of that aspect about killing the mystique. Like, that's a very valid point. And, like, I think another thing, and you guys could probably attest to this better than I can, but just from observing it, it's like you have like the artists who get viral on whatever platform and they do end up killing it. I mean, the first, I guess off the top of my head, you got Zach Bryan, right? Like he's like one of the biggest artists right now, whether you like him or not, he just is. And
I got a point.
Yeah.
He was making music though. He was just putting out YouTube videos because he loved it. Like he wasn't doing social media.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Interrupt. But like,
you're right.
Right, too. I think we all do.
Yeah, he's killer.
Incredible song.
Never listened to him.
A lot.
Zach. He's the guy with the mustache, right?
Yeah, mustache.
That's so cool, isn't he?
Yeah, I feel like he's the guy with the mustache. I saw him playing with Springsteen. Didn't he do a song with Bruce Springsteen?
Yeah, that was him. I think that was him. Yeah.
Cool, man. I love Bruce. I'm from New Jersey. I fucking love Bruce.
Hell yeah. Boss, man. Hell yeah, the boss.
I've cried in the shower to Born to Run before. I'm not a freaking man.
But yeah, no, you're right. And like, and that's kind of what I was getting to. Cause like some of them, like they do make music. They are very good at music and it does help them in the best way possible. And they become massive like Zach Bryan, but like, and you have other guys who like, well, you obviously the guys who aren't good really, and they go viral and they end up like, unfortunately, they just end up kind of eating shit because they go to like the top and then like they just get kind of thrown to the wolves.
Ready for the top.
Yeah. And like even like the guys who are good, but they're not ready yet too. Like they go viral and then they're being thrown on like a festival date or something and it just turns into a disaster, which I've seen that a couple times too. And it's really hard to watch and it sucks for the artist, but I don't know. It just seems like a very great thing to have access to, but it could really like bite you in the ass. A double-edged sword, kind of like you guys said.
Well, I guess like the comparison, you know, if we want to talk basketball terms, you know, not everyone is LeBron coming fresh out of high school to the league, you know, but if you blow up and you haven't put the work in or you know, paid your dues, it kind of shows. That's how you end up as, let me think of a flop pick. Anthony Bennett, wasn't that a guy? I don't know. I'm a Knicks fan.
I get your point.
Yeah. Not good. So, but yeah, it's like some people like that. That's the other edge of the sword. It's like, yeah, you can blow up and get massive and not have a manager and sign a 360 deal and owe the record company the rest of your life.
And then children's lives.
And your children's lives.
And their children.
Yes. If you went to Mars and recorded the record, they would still own it, you know?
And your oxygen.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's like that's a perfect example of it being a double-edged sword. Luckily, when we kind of had that success on social media, we didn't get super, super big. Like, we were bigger than the number that was next to our name. But luckily, the growth has been steady enough where it's like, you know, when I see we have 65,000 followers, I'm like, you know, I can buy that, you know, like, yeah. I believe that, you know, if you told me we had like 900,000, I'd be like, oh, you know what? Maybe not quite yet. Not ready for that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's very interesting time. And this just makes me happy when like the fads are like going back to vinyl. It's like, at least this is like something everyone enjoys when like a new thing pops off. Social media is just like, you know, a terrible place. I'm just gonna say it. Social media sucks. I hate it. But
yeah, I mean,
look what I'm doing right now. Like, it's a part of what we do now. So like, without that, I wouldn't be talking to you guys right now. So
I think the other thing is like, people, you know, you can become chronically online and like think that the world is ending and think that everyone hates each other. But it's like, bro, if you just go outside, it's like people are at work. You know what I'm saying? It's like, yeah, these people are at work.
Yeah,
you know, not everyone is just sitting in their lair, fucking commenting on,
yeah,
just like commenting hate on every fucking post.
Yeah,
you know?
And also it's like, yeah, you could like or follow like whoever, but go to a show and buy their merch, go like listen to their music, like actually help them out. A lot of people think like liking a person's every TikTok or whatever, it's they think that, all right, we're really supporting these guys. It's like, I mean, you're giving them views, but like, won't you go like actually help them,
yeah,
support them,
come to the
like,
show, buy a ticket, you know, we're gonna shake your hand and we're gonna meet you and we're gonna hang out, you know. Yeah. Buy Josiah a beer.
Buy us a drink. I was just about to say,
Josiah wants a beer.
I love bourbon, you know.
Hell yeah. Guys, thanks for hopping on, but before we go, what do you guys got coming up with? I guess I should ask you this, since it's January, do you guys have any like specific goals or anything, any milestone you guys want to reach or you're going for this year? Anything specific?
What did we say? We want to play 150 shows.
$1 million.
Yeah, $1 million would be nice, but I'm not holding my breath.
I'd like to get a new amp.
Cade wants a new amp, yeah.
All right.
So if Hi-Watt's listening.
Yeah.
And or Ampeg
yeah.
Heritage Edition.
A Big Mac.
Yeah.
Yeah. Honestly, you know.
If I could wish for one thing, it's that we just keep getting to do what we're doing and play music together, having fun. Because if you're not having fun, then you shouldn't be doing it. That's what we think, you know. Like, obviously, we're a bunch of fucking idiots, you know. We're joking around and having fun. You know, so I think, like, if you're the day that we become super, like, I don't even know the word, like, corporate, in a sense, where we're like, oh, this is a job, that's when we should hang it up. So as long as we're still having this much fun, that's all I wish for.
Yeah, right on.
Getting lotto ticket wouldn't hurt.
Yeah. Nice. So I guess before we go, though, with shows you guys got coming up, like, what are some shows, I know we're just
man,
talking about new music. If you have anything to plug here, the floor is yours.
Yeah, we're on a 2025 winter tour with the band Feel. We're playing, here we go. Pensacola, Birmingham, Maryville, Tennessee, Durham, North Carolina, Richmond, Lynchburg, and Winchester, Virginia. Then we're going to Pittsburgh, Chattanooga, Indianapolis, Cadillac, Michigan, Saginaw, Michigan, Nashville, Tennessee, Atlanta, Georgia, Isle of Palm, South Carolina, which I'm very excited for, Macon, Georgia, and then where's the last show we're playing? St. Patty's.
Melbourne, Florida, St. Patrick's Day.
Melbourne, Florida. And Tallahassee. Yeah, we do have a hometown show. We're playing a festival here. What is that? February 23rd?
Yep.
Yeah, so that'll be fun.
Nice.
But yeah, it's a lot of shows. We're excited. It's going to be a good time.
Yeah, plenty of opportunities for everyone listening to go see you guys. So make sure you go see a show. And what about socials or websites, anything like that you guys want to throw out there?
Yeah, everything. You can find us on every social media at...
TikTok is back, baby.
TikTok is back. Yeah, we're back.
Yeah, it was, gone for 12 hours and it came back.
Hours.
Thank God, right?
Yes. We're starting an OnlyFans. So if you're trying to see Josiah's sweet, sweet ass, be on there at the Retrograde Official. But no, just the Retrograde Official, YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, and then our website is also the Retrograde Official, where you can buy tickets.
Yeah.
So if you're trying to come see us, check on there.
Hell yeah. So you guys make sure to do that. And thanks for listening. Thank you guys for doing this. This was a very fun conversation. I appreciate it. And everyone also make sure to follow Rage Rowdy, Rowdy Alternative. We're on all the socials and websites. Just Google us. We'll show up, I'm sure. So thank you guys. Thanks everyone for listening. And we'll see you next time.
Thanks for having us.
My boots look good on your bed, and I bet you can do some crazy things with those hips. You've been turning me on all night, so why don't you and I run and tell your friends who's gonna take you home tonight?